This is the Morgan Report with David Morgan. For the latest in precious metals investing, gold, silver, the economy, and more, go to themorganreport.com.
David Morgan with the weekly perspective for the week ending the 28th of April, 2017. Well, first up from Wall Street on Parade, breaking up the big Wall Street banks is back in the headlines. Pam and Russ Martins do a great article talking about the too big to fails and what this really means for the economy. And one thing close to my heart is in this article, they talk about the 1933 Glass-Steagall Act, which was passed by Wall Street at the heart of the Great Depression. And the main idea here was very, very sound. It was separating investment banks from commercial banks. So if you wanted to get a loan to increase your production on your farm, get a farm loan, put up your tractors, collateral, whatever, and do mainstream business, those are commercial banks. If you wanted to invest in speculative investments, that was an investment bank. So it was separated. And of course, that went away under the Clinton administration. And we see what's happened now. And of course, everybody listening to this podcast would know what too big to fail means. This article goes through a lot more in detail about what happened, what happened in 2008 and the systemic risk that we have put on ourselves to an even greater degree now that we have so many too big to fails, and these big banks have gotten even bigger. Next up, U.S. economy barely grew in the first quarter from the Atlanta Fed. U.S. economy likely expanded at a 0.02% annualized in the first quarter, following weaker than forecast data on durable goods orders and advanced data for the goods trade balance in March, according to the Atlantic Federal Reserve GDP Now forecast model shown Thursday. Won't read the whole thing. It's very brief, and it just states that the economy grew about 2% in the fourth quarter of last year, and here we are the first quarter of 2017, 0.2%. Things are not as robust as the mainstream press normally advocates. And from the Economic Times, Global Cashless Society Getting Closer survey found, this is out of London, more than a third of Europeans and Americans would be happy to go without cash and rely on electronic forms of payment if they could. At least 20% already pretty much do so, the survey showed on Wednesday. The study was conducted in 13 European countries, the United States and Australia, also found that many people where cash is mostly used were among those that were keenest to ditch it. Overall, 34% of the respondents in Europe, 38% in the United States, said they'd be willing to go cash-free, according to the survey conducted by Lipos for the ING Bank website of Zenomics. And moving into the commodity that everyone loves, and that's food. This is from Zero Hedge. California farmland plunged 20% or more as returns sink to their lowest level since 1992. Zero Hedge points out that they'd written an article about 9 months earlier titled, "Is California Farmland Overvalued by $70 billion?" And they made a great case for overpaying for farmland, planting almonds. It's a 25-year crop. It takes a while for it to return any investment. And basically, the case is made that the prices of even farmland are going to be coming down in California. And for your weekend reading, if you care to look up the articles that I podcast, another from Charles Hugh Smith. Love to meet the man. We think a lot alike, whatever that means. But he wrote an article called, "Are We Really That Divided?" Talking about Americans and the paradigm between the left and the right. But he says, and it makes a lot of sense to me, that maybe the real driver in this division is divisive language, more specifically language that is designed to drive a wedge between us. In other words, maybe the divisions are an intentional consequence of the language we are using. Great article. I suggest you read it. It talks about why the things are crumbling, how the rich are getting richer, the income disparities between different nation states on the planet, and a lot of thought-provoking rhetoric that he has put down. I would like to add a comment here, and that is, you know, let's make America great again. From my perspective, for my commentary this weekend, what made America great was the integrity of the people. It was that almost everybody was honest and moral, and a man or woman lived by their word. Their word was their bond. It really meant something. So it was a high moral, high honest, high integrity society, and that is what made America great. Regardless of color, regardless of creed, those issues were big in the civil during the civil strife of the 60s. I get that. I understand that. Martin Luther King, I don't think there's anyone that did the great speeches that he did, and there are several I admire, but certainly he is right at the top. Nonetheless, the integrity of the people is what made America great, and I think we have overlooked that. I'll move on to gold and silver here in just a moment. And I'm going to conclude. Gold market basically is, looks like it's topped out, it's coming down. Silver's lost a dollar over the last couple of weeks or so. I did forecast that I saw weakness ahead. But this is an article from Reuters, and the headline reads, it was Thursday, exclusive, fear of regulation causes big swings in London's silver benchmark. London's silver price benchmark is plagued by big, unpredictable fluctuations that risk undermining its credibility and may complicate efforts by the London Bullion Market Association to find a new operator, according to Reuters. The benchmark is used by silver producers and consumers around the world, including jewelers and electronic firms, to price their contracts in the multi-billion dollar a day trade. Let's think about that. We have about 800 million ounces of silver mined every year. We'll round it up to a billion. It's an $18 market right now. That's $18 billion total for an annual production globally. And yet it's a multi-billion dollar a day trade. So is this a physical market or not? I think you can draw your own conclusion. Continuing on, the figure generated at noon London time is intended to be a fair and accurate daily snapshot of the wider, fast-moving spot market price. However, it has diverged widely from the spot price on a number of occasions, at least since January 2016, leaving buyers and sellers with unexpected gains or losses, according to Reuters. Between January 2016 and March this year, volumes have risen as high as 12.9 million ounces and has fallen as low as 200,000 ounces, while on seven occasions the benchmark has diverged from the underlying spot price by 10 cents or more. It has diverged by more than 5 cents on more than two dozen occasions, including five times during March alone. The core of the problem are low volumes and unwillingness of seven banks that execute trading orders to add liquidity by buying or selling silver during the auction to ensure the benchmark stayed close to the spot price. Traditionally, banks did so, but many changed their approach after the scandal over manipulation of the LIBOR interest rate benchmark, according to 10 industry sources. I must comment, isn't it interesting that Reuters puts in it was the LIBOR interest rate that caused them to be wary of giving out these additional trades, when we all know that Deutsche Bank spilled the beans on price manipulation and brought in other banks and named them as being participants in the manipulation. It is recognized that banks' reluctance to amend orders once the auction has started has been an issue for the benchmark. The LBMA is hoping potential new operators can propose ways to enhance the auction process, end of quote. And listen to this. The seven banks are HSBC, JP Morgan, Morgan Stanley, Scotiabank, TD Bank of Canada, UBS, and the China Construction Bank. Scotiabank and China Construction Banks did not respond to requests for comments, while the other five banks also declined to comment. I'll leave it there. I'll be back with you next week for more weekly perspective.